position. So if I can hand it over to Jeremy of the Cadmus team to walk us through the logistics.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our the public input session of our most recent power generation advisory panel meeting. With previous sessions, please do, when it is your turn to be called up to give your comment, please unmute yourself, introduce yourself, and please limit your comments to 2 minutes, 3 minutes if you are representing an organization. If you wish to speak, you can continue to bring your sign up to give a comment in the Q&A by please listing your first and last name, and we will add you to the queue. Additionally, if you are unable to provide everything that you you wish to in your comment in the allotted time, we ask that you please do submit written comments to the panel at powergenpanel@dps.ny.gov. With that, I think we will move to our first commenter, Anastasia Gordon, followed by Laura Burkhart.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. Hi, everyone. I'm Anastasia Gordon from the Alliance for Clean Energy New York. We're a diverse coalition of private companies and nonprofit organizations with the mission to promote clean energy, energy efficiency, and transportation electrification in New York State. We submitted written comments, about 21 of them. 10 of them are about breaking down barriers to building renewables to achieve 70 by 2030. 7 were about equity and cost effectiveness, and 4 of them were about steps New York State can take to prepare for 100% zero emission electricity generation by 2040. In the interest of time, I'll focus on a few. In terms of short-term items related to the build-out of renewables, New York should continue to procure on an aggressive schedule of at least 4,500 gigawatt hours per year from 2021 through to 2026. We should also implement standardized taxation of renewable energy projects, and we should successfully staff the ORES office, which is essential for the new permitting process. In terms of transmission, there should be strategic efforts to accelerate transmission build-out. The PSC should expedite approval of phase one projects, pursue renewable energy zones in transmission investment, examine local distribution and transmission needs, streamline the Article 7 siting process, and reevaluate grid needs to achieve 9 gigawatts of offshore wind. In terms of cost reduction and equity, New York should continue to make strong commitments to equity and cost effectiveness by establishing EJ coordinators at the DPS, NYISO, and FERC, maintaining rooftop and community solar, integrating economic development goals with clean energy at goals supported by IDAs, pursuing energy efficiency and load flexibility measures, protecting customers from costs of this clean energy transition, and targeting energy storage in places where there's low or poor air quality. And then the last thing is New York should assess, research, and define what dispatchable emissions-free resources would be needed to meet the last percentage of resources needed to get to 100% emissions-free electricity generation in 2040. Thank you for the opportunity to provide input. I'm sorry about my kettle in the background.
Great, enjoy your tea or whatever you're making. Next is Laura Burkhart, followed by Gail Pisha.
Hey, Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm sorry, I can't find how to turn my video on, but...
No worries.
Okay. Okay, I'm Laura Burkhardt, and I live in Pearl River, New York, in Rockland County. I want to speak today about the importance of shutting down peaker plants in the state and replacing them with storage or solar plus storage where that's feasible. As you know, peaker plants have several shortcomings. Many of them are old and contribute significantly to local air pollution. They're usually located in disadvantaged communities, and they greatly increase the cost of electricity to ratepayers due to the capacity payments that they receive just for existing. So by replacing these plants, we can achieve multiple goals: reduction in air pollution, especially in disadvantaged communities, and lower cost of electricity for ratepayers. Several studies have analyzed the feasibility of replacing peaker plants with energy storage and have concluded that it is quite possible. However, long-duration storage, rather than just lithium-ion batteries, is an important part of such a replacement. And indeed, it's an important part of overall grid reliability when the grid is powered only by renewables. And by long duration, we mean multi-day, that is greater than lithium ions, 4 to 8 hours. So I also want to speak about the importance of long-duration storage and the importance of researching and evaluating different forms of this storage. We know about current forms like pumped hydro, and compressed air energy storage, but newer implementations are being developed. For example, the aqueous air battery, which was announced by Form Energy in May 2020, and which can potentially provide 150 hours of storage. And so I feel it's very important that we don't rely totally on the solutions that we know about today to achieve our decarbonization goals. We must aggressively research and encourage the development of other technologies. And finally, I want to speak about the importance of more solar development, especially in the Lower Hudson Valley. Recent reports produced for New York agencies state that some mix of fossil fuel and or nuclear generation and or Canadian hydro will be required, even as New York attempts to achieve 100% renewable electric grid.
I apologize, Laura. We are unfortunately at time, and we've got over 20 more people signed up, so we'll need to keep things moving. If you have additional information you'd like to submit, please feel free to send it to the email address. Next is Gail Pisha, followed by Ellen Banks. Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay. It's hard to tell how to unmute with it. So my name is Gail Pisha, and I also live in Rockland County, New York. And I thank you for the opportunity to offer input as this body develops a plan to meet the goals of CLCPA. And I thank you for your work all the work that you're doing on that. I really appreciate it. I think one of the most important actions that needs to be taken by New York State is to stop permitting new gas power plants, including those being proposed as so-called repowerings. Either these new plants will operate for another 30 years or more, which will keep New York State from reaching the goals of CLCPA, or they'll become stranded assets. And, you know, why should resources be put into building new gas plants when those same resources really need to be used to build renewable generation, upgrade our transmission, and develop distributed generation to increase the grid's reliability and resiliency? Like right now, 68% of the grid is powered by fossil fuel. So adding more goes in the exact opposite direction from where we need to end up by 2040. But building renewables and distributed generation plus upgrading transmission will provide jobs for New York workers as we move towards our 100% renewable energy economy. So I think the advisory panel needs to develop a just and equitable plan to phase out all existing fossil fuel generation at the same time that our state adds solar and offshore and onshore wind, supplemented by short and long-term battery storage, like Laura just mentioned. And, you know, with all that, along with improved transmission infrastructure and energy efficiency, New York State will have a grid for the 21st century and beyond. And thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Next is Ellen Banks, followed by Rachel Macleod. Ellen, are you there? Ellen, I see that you're unmuted, but we're not able to hear you. Why don't you keep working on that, and we'll move on and come back to you at a later point. Let's move on to Rachel Macleod, followed by Simon Strauss.
Thank you so much. I'm giving a talk that was basically written by a sister environmentalist at an organization called Beyond Coal. We're so beyond coal that I forgot the name, but it is Beyond Coal, and I agree with every single word she said, and the previous speaker as well, that we must phase out current fossil fuel facilities ASAP. We are also concerned about time wasted discussing false solutions. Fracked gas was a false solution packaged as clean bridge fuel. We've wasted the past decade building power plants and pipelines to import fracked gas from Pennsylvania, where water was poisoned, communities decimated. Climate breakdown is a global crisis, and we're all in this together. We can't choose to pollute another area so we can have what looks like clean energy, whether the polluting is done in New York, Pennsylvania, or Canada. And to that point, hydrogen gas production is carbon intensive, so that it's not a good idea for now. It's not a solution. And in terms of Canadian hydropower, that is also a false solution. And the difference that I see is hydropower from Canada has been studied for years. It's not going to change. It's not a research question. You know, it's just plain wrong. Flooding land releases methylmercury poisoning. The fish die. People can't eat. It's cold up there. There is no grocery store. And these food sources are the primary source of nutrition for people. Hydro-Québec has admitted that its electricity emits methane and carbon dioxide. The clear cutting of boreal forest goes along and destroys vast carbon sinks. This is not a solution. Please let's not wait another waste another minute on false solution that will take us further in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Next is Simon Strauss, followed by B. Arundel.
Hi, Jeremy. Making sure you can hear me.
Yes, I can.
Thank you. My name's Simon Strauss. I'm on the Town of Olives Conservation Advisory Council, the Ulster County Environmental Management Council, and also participate in the meetings of the Mid-Hudson Regional Sustainability Coalition. To those of you on the panel I know, thank you very much for all your hard work, to all of you for what you're doing. I'd like to comment on initiative number 9, item 1A, which is hosting capacity. In quotes, it says proactive and timely investment in local transmission and distribution infrastructure and associated cost sharing with utilities. And I'd like to ask how the panel on behalf of the Climate Action Council is going to first ensure that the utilities do make those proactive and timely investments. And second, how are those investments to be paid for? By the state, by the utility, and or by the ratepayers? As an example, in the pending Central Hudson rate case, I've asked how the utility plans to address its CLCPA goals for renewable energy by 2030 and 2040. The impression I have is that other than local transmission and distribution upgrades to permit large-scale renewables to be brought in on a wholesale basis, there is no plan to beef up the local distribution grid to accommodate local community distributed generation. And on these calls with the rate case, we hear no dissent from the DPS staff. So I'd like to ask that you, the Power Generation Panel, give strong guidance to the Climate Action Council and thus to the Department of Public Service that you are looking for very significant distributed generation in the renewable energy generation mix and an upgraded distribution system capable of accommodating that DG. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Simon. Next will be B. Arendelle, followed by Brian Campbell.
Hi, can you hear me? Hello? Are you, can you hear me? Oh, shoot.
We can hear you.
We can hear you fine.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm the director of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. We essentially raised the awareness of fracking 13 and a half years ago on the East Coast, and it's been slow, but getting results. So I wanted to bring up a very recent paper from actually the beginning of March this year. I put the details of it in the chat. It's published in EOS. I guess that's the journal. Now, honestly, I don't understand how they did the measurements, but basically they're saying that pipelines, 9 of the 10 largest emitters of greenhouse gas are pipelines, oil and gas pipelines, which is pretty amazing. I think the way it worked is, I mean, they use publicly available data, and the paper is open access, so everybody should look at it. And you folks who are more schooled in this area than I am, take a look. I understand measurements, and we used a fellow using a Picaro CRDS machine to measure methane around compressors and a lot of other places. And every time they went over a pipeline, there was a spike. So we know that there was more methane coming out of the transmission line than the immediate surrounding area. So I urge you to take into account in your figuring what the impacts of pipelines are to look at this at this article. And also, I'm sure, as you know, that the pipeline companies are allowed to charge 2.2% of the value of their product to ratepayers for lost and unaccounted for gas that they refer to as LUG, wonderfully. I think they're admitting that they are losing gas. And I don't know about oil, but I know that's the effect with the, and also in terms of looking at geographical areas, there should be a similar type of look-see at everything going on and its aggregation, not just looking at single point sources, which is ridiculous, because you can have 18 different things all related to gas drilling, say, in one area. And if you look at each individual source, it's not considered a major emitter, but surely the whole pile is. And I think that's a very important thing.
Great. Thank you. In the interest of time, we have to keep moving ahead. Thank you. Next is Brian Campbell, followed by Ellen Banks.
Yes, hello. My name is Brian Campbell. I'm an electrical engineer, BSW. I want everybody to know about electricitymap.org, electricitymap.org. This website looks at live emissions 24/7, so we can, and it reports the amount, percentage of generation by various, so the emissions are reported in carbon grams per kilowatt hour. Now, looking at the grids throughout North America, the lowest emission grid is Ontario. And that regional transmission organization is 60% nuclear power. Right now, it's putting out about 22 grams of carbon per kilowatt hour compared to New York's ISO, independent service operator, at 290 grams per kilowatt hour. That's about 6 or 7 times New York has than Ontario, and it's because of nuclear power. I also belong to an organization, it's called New York Nuclear. We are very concerned that we are going to, at the end of April, shut down Unit 3 of Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant. That will increase New York's emissions 12 to 15 million tons of emissions, mostly greenhouse gases, but any emissions are bad. So this, I am hoping that this organization will take into account that Governor Cuomo has rammed through this shutdown premature. It can operate until 2024 on its present license of Indian Point Nuclear. If we are really concerned about emissions reductions, then we have to keep our current nuclear. We have to keep our current upstate nuclear. And on questions of costs, everybody says nuclear is expensive. It's not. Ontario is, I calculated, about 12 cents per kilowatt hour. 12 cents per kilowatt hour. New York, I know, is up at least around 20 for ratepayers in New York. And this is, and once we start the backbone, which is offshore wind, the most expensive wind energy that we could possibly go to, then it's also intermittent. And if you're looking at Texas, well, get a cold snap, we're going to have to divert our methane, our gas generation, to heat, just like Texas did. And you better pray that they have enough oil on site, because that's what they're going to be burning at, like Ravenswood and down in New York, instead of gas, with more emissions, and also 2.5 micron emissions, which
thank you, Brian. Oh, unfortunately, we have to keep trying to
move. Thank you.
Here.
I'm sorry.
No worries. Next is Ellen Banks, followed by Robert Shiselski. Ellen, are you able to speak now? Unfortunately, we're not able to hear you, Ellen, so we'll keep moving here. Next is Robert Soschelski, followed by Linda Schneekloff. Ellen, if you are interested, please do send your comments in by email to the PowerGen panel at dps.ny.gov. Apologies for the technical issues. Robert, please go ahead.
Bob Soschelski, I'm with the Sierra Club. You can hear me, I hope?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I listened to a lot of the presentation today on gas. Methane is 86 more times potent a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide in the first 20 years of its release to the atmosphere. The last speaker spoke about, or not the last speaker, but previous, about the pipeline leakage, which is a great problem nationwide. This is time to stop the construction of new gas plants and the rehab of old plants into gas or gas generation plants. We already have 86% of our electricity of power in New York provided by gas, and we have to reduce this, not build more. We have our goals of 2040. And we must stop these new gas plants. There's also talk about methane or green hydro, and we're very concerned that that gas, either as a primary or a secondary source of power, will be used to in an attempt to create this green hydrogen. If there is going to be green hydrogen, it has to be green. Cannot be powered by gas or any backup of gas. And leakage is another problem. I live in Buffalo. We have a 100-year-old gas system in many of the city in the first ring suburbs. There's lots of leakage not being measured. We know gas is a problem. We just have to get off of it. There was a mention by one of the speakers about Richard Perez. I think it was Beata, and Perez gave a very interesting discussion, and I've seen it producing 50 or constructing a 50% overbuild of renewables powered by some storage. I know storage is expensive, but if you overbuild your renewables by 50% and couple that with storage, you come up with a cost of about 5 cents per kilowatt hour. It's a great study, and I think it's a way that we can look at how we can proceed even after 2030.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. Unfortunately, we have to keep things tight today. We've got a lot of commenters. Next is Linda Schneekloff, followed by Leontine Greenberg.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Great, thank you. My name is Linda Schneekloff, and I speak today for the Grandmothers Council of Niagara, who are concerned with leaving a habitable and healthy planet to our children, to the 7th generation, 14th, and 100th generation. As elders, we feel we are responsible to look at proposed actions today in light of their impact on our descendants, our home, the Earth. Climate disruption and the sixth extinction event are in the front of our minds, and we thank you in New York State for taking direct and urgent action towards 100% renewable energy to consider what kind and its impacts. To this end, we say, stop all nuclear energy production. It is unconscionable that any generation of humans would decide to address a problem by producing a toxic and deadly substance that could, if through accident or accumulation, killed. There is no safe level of exposure to radioactivity, and since the 1945 explosion of the atomic bomb to Fukushima to the West Valley Nuclear Waste Facility, we have spread this material across the globe. We've created elements like plutonium that are alien to the Earth. There are many reasons to reject nuclear as a solution to climate change. It cannot be deployed within the time frame necessary. Meltdown risk, and it's said that 1.5% of all nuclear power plants ever built have melted down to some degree. Mining for uranium is racist and causes cancer. Its cost is prohibitive, and contrary to what some people say, nuclear is not carbon-free when its life cycle is considered. In addition, we have the capacity and we have the ability to use safer mechanisms. We have no right to continue the nuclear experiment knowing that it brings death, not life, to our children and their children. No one, just remember, no one in the entire world today knows what to do with nuclear waste. It must be guarded and taken care of for hundreds of thousands and yes, millions of years. Some of the short-lived radioactivity, they say, will be gone in 300 years. Short? Hardly. The U.S. has only been around less than 300 years. And for millions, thousands of years? Remember, the Great Lakes is only 12,000 years old.
Thank you, Linda. Okay. Sorry, we're out of time.
Yeah, just don't forget it's renewable.
Next is Leontine Greenberg, followed by Ann Finneran.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
My name is Leontine Greenberg, and I live in Queens. I teach an extracurricular science class for 8 to 10-year-olds, and we've been talking about how human activity affects ecosystems. So, of course, they talk a lot about climate change, and they talk about how angry it makes them, which is very angry. And it's really heartbreaking to talk to them and see how confused they are about the fact that we're still burning fossil fuels. They just can't understand why that's still happening, knowing what we know. So they've written letters, which we're planning to send to the members of the Climate Action Council. But when we found out about this hearing, we decided that we might want to hear some of them too. So I have 3 letters and I will read them quickly. The first one is from Massimo and he says, "Dear New York State Climate Action Council, climate change has been affecting the Earth since the 1900s. Ocean waters have been rising and coral reefs are dying. More forest fires are happening because of less snow and rain. Climate change makes me feel angry and annoyed." Me too. "I feel that because it is affecting my life and other people's lives, we should use more wind and sun power. I want the state to put solar panels on all the houses for electricity, and I also think we should not burn natural gas. Sincerely, Massimo." The second one is from Zoya. She says, "Dear New York State Climate Action Council, when I think about climate change, I feel angry and sad. We are given so much smarts and brain power, and instead of making a literal paradise, we destroy the world. I want a future. I want the state to make electric cars more available to normal people. I also want less power plants. It affects both habitats and people suffering from asthma. More solar panel-based energy would be ideal with other renewable energy sources. Sincerely, Zoya Seed." And then the last one is from Leo Musica. "Dear New York State Climate Action Council, climate change is affecting the world. Ocean levels are rising. There are more forest fires. Coral reefs are bleaching and beaches are washing away. Climate change makes me angry because God made us a home and we are destroying it. Climate change makes me sad because forests are burning just because we want electricity. If we want electricity so bad, then let's use sources that don't pollute our home. Solar power is what I really want to see. Wind power is also a solution. All I really wanted to say is replace fossil fuel, natural gas burning power plants with solar and other sources. Sincerely, Leo Musica." So none of these kids can understand why we would ever build one more gas-fired power plant. It's completely inconceivable to them. So they are hoping that your recommendations include an absolute ban on new fossil fuel infrastructure and an investment in renewable energy. Thank you.
Thank you, Leontine. Next is Ann Finneran, followed by Tara Vamos.
Couple of things. I want to address two power plants that really should be shut down. One of them, fuel power plants. One of them is the Greenwich Power Plant, which was originally proposed, converted from a coal-fired plant to natural gas in 2017. Many of us fought that because it wasn't necessary and it was not a closed-loop system. It draws water from the Finger Lakes. We are looking, when you think about climate change, don't just think about air emissions and greenhouse gas emissions. We're talking about potential desertification. 3/100 of the planet is fresh water. That's very small. And if we continue to use water for energy, we're not using it for its primary purpose, which is life. So please keep that in mind. So the Greenwich Power Plant was proposed as a peaker plant. It was never intended to run at full capacity. It is currently running at full capacity. The greenhouse gas emissions have increased tremendously since the Bitcoin mining operation was started. That should never have been allowed, and it should be shut down. Similarly, the CPV power plant in Middletown, New York, town of Wauwatosa, is operating and has been without the air permit. And that also needs to be stopped pending air permit. It is in a very close, a mile from environmental justice communities, and the emissions contribute to COVID deaths. You need to look at both of these power plants very deeply. The one power plant is not being used for its original use. It's being used for Bitcoin mining, uses a tremendous amount of energy. CPV at least is closed loop. Greenwich is not closed loop, and it's sucking out of the Seneca Lake and probably the feeder into Seneca Lake from Cuca Lake. So please consider both of those and consider again. Thank you, Grandma from Niagara. Nuclear waste is nothing to kid around with. We don't know how to deal with it. Waste is a number one issue that we're going to have to confront. Thanks.
Thank you, Anne. Next is Tara Vamos, followed by Mary Finneran.
Hi, my name is Tara Vamos, and I'm saying this, I have New Yorker News on my nameplate, but this is not as a member of New Yorker News, but as a citizen. I would far prefer that we had rolling blackouts and that we build an additional gas-fired power plant. Enough is enough. New York's climate goals, which all the panels that are putting information into the CIC are working on meeting, and it's tough to meet them. Those goals are a good starting point, but realistically, if we look at where things are actually at currently, with ocean currents slowing down already, with the Earth's climate becoming wildly destabilized, that we are already experiencing thousands of deaths per year and billions of dollars worth of damage per year, we should actually be keeping in mind that we should really be shooting for shorter time frames. And it is absolutely unallowable that we would allow gas plants to build anything while saying that they're going to switch to green hydrogen in the future. They shouldn't be allowed to be built. But most of all, I would really like the panel to consider what would be those outlier solutions that really aren't being looked at? Temporary shutoffs of electricity, encouraging efficiency and asking people to cut back on their power usage, which really isn't being truly addressed very much. And in terms of something that you have talked about, some is making sure that local grids get upgraded so that there can be distributed energy generation in the form of solar. We clearly need more battery storage. I appreciate the work people are putting into this, but the level of urgency suggests that it's time to break out new solutions. So I'm volunteering some blunt ones. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Tara. Next is Mary Finneran, followed by Anne Rhodes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Thank you to people speaking about the gas and the Greenwich and all of that. I know I sound just like my sister. I'd like to discuss the Iroquois EXC expansion by compression and using the expansion of compressor stations versus new pipelines. I say no new pipelines. I cheered Lisa Dix when she said that. But they are also doing plans to expand compressor stations so that the gas that is going through old pipelines will is increased, or it will increase the leakage, it will increase the emissions at the compressor stations. Compressor stations are actually worse than power stations for their emissions. The Iroquois EXC is going to be used for heat in New York City, or would be used for heat in New York City, but Iroquois also does power the Cricket Valley and the Athens power plant, and other power plants in Connecticut. So it is seriously, I think, endangering to be expanding these pipeline compression. And I'd like you to look at that, especially like during blowdowns, the emissions during blowdowns from compressor stations, especially when they're now going to be doubling or tripling the amount of gas going into them, will be huge. The emissions are dangerous to people. In fact, they warn them to stay inside. Everybody else has been speaking on other things. I did want to talk about that. I know the Dominion pipeline was also an expansion project, which is in place now. So thank you for being there. Please take this under consideration.
Thank you, Mary. Next is Ann Rhodes, followed by Eric Meyer.
Thank you. I'm Ann Rhodes. I work for Cornell Cooperative Extension in Tompkins County. I'm an energy educator. I have two things that I'm, of course, I'm concerned with all the things that people have brought up, but there are two things I want to especially notice. One is how important it is to pay attention to storage and be ramping up storage right now. If we're going to switch to mostly wind and solar, we need way, way, way more storage. And there are a lot of solutions out there, and there are probably new ones on the horizon. So I'd like to really emphasize that we don't wait on storage solutions and we move forward quickly. The second thing is that I'm concerned about the community support that's going to be necessary to move some of these things forward. And one of the things that will help mute resistance on a local level is if we make sure that we take care of any workers whose jobs we eliminate, that we have a robust and equity-based plan to take care of workers, to retrain workers, to make sure that the community understands that we care about the people who are losing their jobs in the fossil fuel industries. And that will help build community support for many of the changes that are going to be necessary. I would also like to suggest that you find ways to collaborate with local municipalities to reduce gas in new construction. The more gas in new construction can be reduced, the less gas is going to have to be produced and distributed. And there must be some way for that kind of collaboration to be enhanced, so that communities are encouraged to produce green building policies that reduce the use of new gas infrastructure, which will, of course, then become stranded assets very quickly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ann. Next is Eric Meyer, followed by Valdi Viderpass.
All right. Okay, appears I'm unmuted. Thank you so much. My name is Eric Meyer. I'm a volunteer with Climate Reality Project, and I also run an organization called Generation Atomic that is in support of nuclear energy in the fight against climate change. I'm just crunching a few numbers while listening in here. One, the first one I looked at was how much it will cost, the social cost will be to shut down Diablo Canyon early because of all the additional carbon that will be emitted. And this is not even thinking about the methane associated with closing it down. Just the extra carbon emissions at $125 a ton results in $1.6 billion a year social costs that is incurred on New York and its neighbors. And that's just crazy. So, all right, let's say, you know, this ship has sailed, we're going to close it down. How long will it take us to replace it? Another number I crunched here, well, the world record for building out clean energy or building out renewable energy as fast as possible. And this is wind, solar, biomass, and geothermal combined is Denmark. And if you took the speed that Denmark did it per capita and applied that to New York, that would take us 9 years to replace Indian Point. 9 years when, you know, we don't have time to waste here. And we're throwing away over 90% of downstate New York's clean electricity. Why, you know? another thing is this isn't a permanent replacement, right? The one thing that's forgotten here is that after 25 years or so, we're gonna have to replace all of this energy again. And there's an analysis of Mark C. Jacobson's 100% renewables plan, and it found that once we replace everything, it'll require the daily replacement of 1.23 million, so 1.25 million square meters of solar panels every single day forever. So just keep that in mind. That's a lot of mining, a lot of land use. That's a lot of habitat we're talking about. And in the meantime, people die from extra air pollution.
Thank you, Eric. Sorry, we're getting close on time. We still have a lot of speakers to move through. Next is Valdi Vidapas, followed by Meredith Kane.
Hi, my name is Valdi Vidapas. I live in Endicott, New York, which is in Broome County. I'm saddened and frustrated. I'm a retired engineer, and I've been looking into the climate problem for years now and closely looking at our energy situation, including what happened in Texas. I spent hundreds of hours on the energy situation. And one thing I want to remind people here is that the existing situation we have with our current generation mix, reliant mostly on fossil fuels, according to a Harvard University study that just came out a few weeks ago, basically is killing one out of five people planet-wide from just air pollution alone. And in the United States, it's roughly 350,000 people that die. This is per year, not per 10 years, per year. So the existing situation is insane to allow to continue. And I echo what other people have said. We need to stop new gas-fired generating plants. We need to also stop repowering of existing plants using natural gas. We need to stop building new fossil fuel infrastructure, pipelines, compressor station, all of that. That needs to stop. We need to develop, and I thank you for all the work you're doing. I know this is a tough job that you've taken on here. We need to develop a really comprehensive, urgent plan to phase out all existing fossil fuels in our electric sector. And we also need to plan and invest to upgrade the grid to support 100% renewable electricity, not just for current demand, but the demand that is going to happen when everybody and all industry switches over for everything, transportation, industry, heating, all of it is going to have to be powered from renewable energy. So we need to build way over what we currently see as demand. And also we need a just and equitable clean energy transition. And as other people have already pointed out too, we need to build massive amounts of storage. Lithium ion battery storage is right now the most proven, reasonable cost, practical method, but there are other methods that can be used as well. And I also wanted to mention that just in Broome County where I live, my former workplace, which was an Air Force Plant 59, ended up being demolished after the flood of 2011, which was a 500-year flood that happened in this county only 5 years after a 100-year flood. And both of those started to top the levees that were built in the aftermath of previous massive flooding from Hurricane Agnes. The most recent flood of 2011, it dumped a foot of rain in some areas in 24 hours. And it's also making it difficult for farmers. So please, urgency is really important. Thank you.
Thank you, Valdi. Next is Meredith Kane, followed by Suzanne Hunt.
Hi. Hi, my name is Meredith Kane. I'm a resident of the town of Copake in Columbia County. I'm speaking on behalf of Sensible Solar for Rural New York. We're an organization of about 3,000 constituents in Eastern Columbia County and growing, all of whom are strong supporters of alternative energy, but have organized to oppose the Hecate Energy Shepherd's Run solar project, proposed 60-megawatt project for the town of Copake. The issue is, while 60 megawatts is a wonderful, laudable contribution to the state's energy goals, the siting of this, you know, 500 or 400 acres of solar panels could not be more detrimental to the local community. It would take prime farmland, it would be adjacent to wetlands, adjacent to the school, and damaging, very damaging to the local, a very fragile, you know, tourism, recreation, local economy. This would just transform it in a terrible way. So I urge you, as you are thinking about power generation, and as you are thinking about the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, please put some emphasis on community protection. You will get strong opposition to all of these, to many of your large scale projects, unless you work closely with the local governments, local communities on siting these facilities appropriately. They are large land users, and coming in and riding roughshod over a town's land use regulations is a very difficult thing, for local people to stomach. In particular, I also want to support the notion of, that as a number of people have spoken to, the importance of distributed generation rather than industrial scale generation. Not every area, not every site is appropriate to industrial scale solar generation. We can achieve our goals and achieve them in a way that is consistent with preserving farmland, with preserving other natural ecological attributes, with preserving our rural environments, if we do it in a way that is distributed, that is small scale, and that nevertheless, can generate tremendous amounts of energy from solar, energy from wind. It doesn't all have to be done at industrial scale, and that can be very devastating.
Thank you, Meredith. Next is Suzanne Hunt, followed by Kathleen McCarthy.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, my name is Suzanne Hunt. I just want to echo a number of the things that have been said. I have been an environmental advocate my whole life. I'm an environmental scientist. I've put in geothermal and solar and wind and EV chargers at my own farm upstate, and I consult for a company that funds community solar and a whole number of other climate solutions. And I just want to... listening to the conversation, I hadn't planned on testifying, but I just want to kind of reframe how we're talking about the green hydrogen issue. So hydrogen itself is just a tool. It's not good or bad. It depends on how it's used. And so as you guys are crafting your recommendations, I think the most helpful thing you can do is write recommendations dictating how to use the tool correctly for the climate. So fuel cells do not combust hydrogen. They're a lot like a battery, and they're a useful tool in the toolkit. So, it's maybe not the best analogy to use, but I keep thinking about, a hammer in the hands of a murderer, can kill someone. But we don't take the hammer out of our toolkit. We make it illegal to use it to kill someone. You can use lots of tools badly, and so we want to dictate the policy and the regulations and the enforcement mechanisms to prevent those uses. We don't want to remove the tool. And I think Bill mentioned earlier that we have a company called Plug Power in New York State that is employing 1,000 people already, and they're selling tens of thousands of zero-emission fuel cell vehicles around the country, and that is something that we want to support. So just please be nuanced in your recommendations about how to responsibly use hydrogen. Thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne. Next is Kathleen McCarthy, followed by Miles McManus. Just of note, we still have quite a queue for speakers, and we may not be able to get to everyone by 4:30. So if we are not able to get to you, apologies. Please do submit your comments by email. Kathleen, over to you.
Okay, thank you. I suspect you can hear me, right?
Yes, I can.
Great. So my name is Kathleen McCarthy. I'm a restoration ecologist in New York City, and I've been alarmed by climate change ever since I saw a climate model with all of the positive feedbacks. Now that those models and projections have not only been verified by present conditions, but also show us veering towards the worst case scenario, I'm closer to being terrified. The animals and plants that sustain us cannot survive the changes projected without a drastic reduction in our greenhouse gases. Now that we are at the ninth hour, it's imperative that all the solutions we implement be real solutions, not fake solutions, so that we have a net reduction of greenhouse gases. What we implement now will lock us in for decades or longer. So a net reduction to me means that we're not contributing to the flooding of boreal forests, which function as a carbon sink. We witnessed the disaster biofuels caused when other countries cut down forests to grow biofuels for the U.S. Let's not repeat that disaster and mistake. It means that we need to ban new frack gas power plants in our electric sector, not just push it off and say, well, we'll do it in 40 years. This directly undermines our climate goals, and we have to reject the proposals brought forward in New York State for new gas power plants. We need to build renewable energy now in New York State with good living wages. And as we phase out the fossil fuel plants, we need to protect the workers and communities that have powered our community for decades. So, creating a 21st century transmission infrastructure to move 100% renewable energy generated here in New York is very important, and prioritizing transmission of in-state and truly clean out-of-state resources, not the false solution of Canadian hydropower. We want to address environmental injustice here in New York State and not export environmental injustice to Canada and elsewhere. Lastly, since you were talking about reliability earlier, I think we really need to create reliability by scaling up green storage solutions, but truly green storage solutions.
Thank you, Kathleen. Sorry, we're at time.
No, that's fine. One last sentence. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Miles McManus, followed by Catherine Skopik.
Hi, thank you. I'd like to use my time to amplify an idea about timing that several of the other speakers have touched on. This panel has a very clear mandate and I think some fairly clear pathways. And therefore, you collectively on the panel have a moral responsibility to act now. What I mean is that this panel needs to shortcut this Climate Action Council timeline and come forward with the first step of banning all new non-renewable power infrastructure and practices in New York State now, today, as soon as possible. This can't wait until the CAC's work is done in late 2022 or 2023. The longer we wait, the more lasting harm is going to be locked in. There are many benefits of taking this action. You begin to walk the talk and back up Albany's promises with action. It would create pressure for energy companies to transition now. It would force us to transition quickly, so it improves our chances of success with the science getting grimmer and grimmer all the time. It prevents wasting taxpayer money by spending time considering false solutions. And finally, a side benefit is that it would save the activists, community members, parents, and children of New York an enormous amount of time, energy, and stress. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Miles. Next is Catherine Skopik, followed by Joseph Campbell.
Thank you, members of the PSC and the CAC.
My name is Catherine Skopik. I'm speaking as a citizen, and I'm a member of Sierra Club, New York City group. For eons, life has existed on this planet, and through these millions of years has evolved us here now. So too has evolved our energy source. What has served us in the past, fossil fuels, is bringing us to the point of destruction. So now we have in front of us the choice of transitioning and immediately to renewable energy. And I thank you for the good work you are all doing and having us achieve this goal. Three things that I like to think of are: one, use only healthy, sustainable energy sources. Two, ensure an equitable transition for the workers of outdated, unhealthy, non-sustainable energy by retaining, retraining, or enabling retirement for eligible workers. Three, full attention, compensation to environmental justice communities that for past decades have suffered negative health impacts from fossil fuel emissions and plants. There is a problem considering nuclear energy as healthy and sustainable. We already have 83,000 metric tons of nuclear waste that we don't know what to do with. So why should we make more of it? When you're in a hole, just stop digging. And I do very much like Lisa Dick's suggestion of having a rulemaking on what actually qualifies as carbon free. Okay, you realize that every single nuclear accident that we've had, and by the way, Indian Point has had a few near misses, only a few of which have been publicized. Every other major plant, there was an accident, for example, Three Mile Island, then there was a correction made in regard to core meltdown, then we had Chernobyl, a correction was made there, then we had Fukushima, who would have thought of a tsunami, so we can't say that there aren't going to be accidents. Radiation in the hands of the medical profession can cure. Radiation in the hands of nuclear power, nuclear weapons, kill.
Thank you, Catherine. Apologies, we're nearing time.
Okay.
Next is Joseph Campbell, followed by Irene Weiser. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. Joseph Campbell, I'm president of Seneca League Guardian, a Waterkeeper Alliance affiliate. And to elaborate on what Ann Finneran spoke to, Greenwich Generation received a certificate of public convenience and necessity from the Public Service Commission to convert an old coal-fired power plant on the Seneca League shoreline to natural gas and to operate as a peaker plant. In other words, supplying electricity to the grid only during times of peak demand. Since then, they've installed 7,900 Bitcoin servers, basically high-powered computers that require an enormous input of energy. And their plans are to expand to 30,000 of these things. So now, instead of just generating power intermittently, burning natural gas, they plan on running the plant at peak capacity 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is going to increase, and the DEC issued them water withdrawal and discharge permits, and more importantly for us, Title V air permits based on that business model. So now, instead of burning natural gas and emitting greenhouse gases intermittently, they will be enormously emitting more. And of course, this flies in the face of Governor Cuomo's nation-leading CLCPA to reduce New York's emissions of greenhouse gases. And there's unfortunately the only thing standing in the way of this company at this point, since the DEC grandfathered in these permits from when it was a coal-fired power plant, and is basically saying that as long as they're within the permit limits, they won't do anything. and the Public Service Commission basically washed their hands of this, saying that they don't regulate Bitcoin mining. The only thing standing in the way of this expansion and this increase in greenhouse gas emissions is the little town of Torrey, where the planning board looking at a site plan approval. And it appears to us that they're going to approve the site plan and the company's going to be able to go ahead. We would hope that someone could step in and hit the pause button on this before they get this approval and increase their greenhouse gas emissions potentially for decades to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Joseph. Next is Irene Weiser, followed by Paul, then Lyndon Toll.
Thanks. Hi. I appreciate the time to speak to you. I, too, would like to speak to you about the Greenwich Power Plant in part. I've spoken to this committee before and submitted comments as well, a memo detailing the way in which the maneuver by the Greenwich Power Plant to produce power on site and use it behind the meter, I believe, is an end run around the CLCPA, both in actuality and certainly an end run around the intent to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. What I come to you today with that's new and different is a suggestion that the committee please put in place a recommendation to cap greenhouse gas emissions from its existing generating sources. My concern is not just about what's happening with the Greenwich Power Plant on Seneca Lake. My concern extends much further to the 100-odd peaker plants and old steam turbine plants in the environmental justice areas downstate that are subject to NOx regulations. They too could use this exploit this loophole to continue power generation for years to come. And one only need to look at the recent Albany Times Union opinion piece submitted by the independent power producers of New York State, boasting about the Greenwich Power Plant direction and envisioning that as the future for the gas industry in New York State. We've got to stand up to that. This is a critical situation that honestly needs action long before the recommendations of the Climate Action Council are promulgated and go through public hearings and anything else. So I urge that there be quick action to cap greenhouse gas emissions from all existing generation sources, and that there be a plan in place for a structured reduction of those emissions so that we cannot have what has happened at Greenwich happening all around the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Irene. Fortunately, we are at time, and there are, I know several folks that are still on the list, but we do need to conclude the session now. We highly encourage anyone who was not able to speak or anyone who was not able to complete their statement today to please submit comments by email to powergenpanel@dps.ny.gov. This will not be our last public input session. There will be another similar session at the end of our next advisory panel meeting. So certainly if you would like to speak then, please join us for the next session. With that, I'll pass it back over to, I'm not sure if there was someone who was planning on closing out the session from the panel.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. This is Sarah Osgood. I'll just thank the panel members as well as the attendees for their participation, and we appreciate the feedback, and we look forward to gathering again in a couple weeks. So thank you. Take care.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.